I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Reprise. Okay, welcome to Playboys episode 14, I believe. Got myself and Alex, and we should have done this for episode 12. It's Twelfth Night by one William Shakespeare.
Yeah, if only we were thinking about that.
Yeah, if we'd only thought ahead. But no, this is an interesting one. So it's a middle period comedy that I really thought I was going to love, and then I really didn't like at all.
Yeah, so I want to, like, before we get into it, like, what happened and all that, go over, like, first impressions. So what didn't you like about it?
So my least favorite part of most of the plays we've looked at are those little irrelevant scenes with the clowns. This play is just that scene for five acts. I think that's what I didn't like. Like, the clown is actually a main character for a lot of the play, but also Toby Belch and Andrew Ogcheek are essentially just clowns as well. So I'm just getting like long scenes of like three clowns clowning, and I'm like, this is the bit I don't like.
Well, I wouldn't call them clowns because they're not as good with like the puns and the play on words as Festy is. But sure. Yeah, Festy is certainly a main character. And I guess if you don't care for the clown's general persona, you're not going to maybe like this so much, which is a little fair. But I actually really like it because it's a very different type of clown than we've seen before, because Toby Belch, Andrew Ogcheek, and or Aguface, as he's joked about,
yes,
like in Festy, like they do bring comedy to it, and I do think that they are main characters and do tie into the main story quite a bit.
Oh yeah, I mean they do, and I get that that makes them different from the type of clowns we've seen before, who really haven't done anything. Like they have been irrelevant. Maybe it's just, I always find those scenes, they're not really funny. I don't know. But I will be honest, you know, to the play's credit, I prefer the second half. Sort of halfway through Act 3, it picks up. And then I did enjoy Acts 4 and 5.
Okay.
So.
And I thought you'd enjoy Act 1 quite a bit. Like, especially the way it starts out. Like, I feel like Act 1, Scene 1 is just you.
Yeah, I mean, Act 1, Scene 1, we open with the Duke, right? Yeah, I suppose it is.
Can music be the food of love, play on? Like, I feel like this is the type of poetry that you live by. And I do think that this is Shakespeare's best poetry, or some of. I mean, Romeo and Juliet's really close.
I should say that I have no problems with the language. And obviously that opening line, as you say, is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's from the Duke, and I like the Duke generally. But I think it's just as we go through Acts 1 and 2, I just felt a bit... You know, there's just long scenes of Maria and Toby and Andrew and the clown. I'm just like, nothing's happening here, you know. Just joking around.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't understand why Fabian's a character.
Yeah, right?
No, right. Same thing, whoever the heck Curio is, I didn't even write down who they're related to. And I just remember, oh, Curio's in the play. All right, that's enough of
that. Yeah, right. There's some that... So let's talk about the characters, and we'll work out which ones we care about. So I think Olivia is probably the most important character for me. Does that seem fair?
Yeah. Olivia, Viola are the two main characters.
Yes. So Olivia is a rich countess, and we have the Duke of Illyria, Orsino, who wants to court her. We have Viola and her brother Sebastian. They don't meet till the end of the play, so they're kind of doing separate characters. And then we just have like a few others that are, you know, servants to Olivia. So Malvolio is really the most important. He's her steward. But then, as you say, Fabian, who's not that important. Feste is the clown, and her uncle Tony Belch and his friend Andrew Ogcheek. So they're just kind of all faffing about, really. And Maria is her female attendant.
So you have Sebastian, Orsino, Viola, and Olivia as the main four who are important for the main plot. But Andrew, Toby, Malvolio, and Maria are, they're the ones I feel like that keep it afloat.
Yeah, that's like fair.
You need them. Malvolio, he's just a fun grump to annoy. You have Toby Belch, who's just a drunk, and he likes playing pranks on people. Andrew's an idiot, which is really interesting because I actually acted in this play, and I was Sir Andrew.
Ah, right. Yes. I would be curious to see that.
I could probably send you a picture later if you want to put that on
Let's do that. And we can round it off with, as you say, who is Curio, right? So Curio and Valentine, attendants of the Duke, irrelevant.
I forgot Valentine was a character.
Yeah, exactly. And then Antonio, he's a sea captain who's a friend of Sebastian's, but he's not really that important either.
Yeah, he saved Sebastian at sea. So the main part of the story that happened before the play even begins is Viola and Sebastian were out at sea. A storm seemed to have hit and both of them got separated and both think the other is dead. Sebastian was saved by Antonio and Viola was saved by the captain.
Yeah. So, look, it does have some themes of romance and saving people and love and all this. And there's some themes that I do like. And as we said, the language is perfect. That opening line, if music at the foot of love, play on. Like, I do enjoy some aspects of it. But look, let's get started because it's a pretty short play. And you know, some of the scenes can be summed up in a sentence. Like, there's not... I don't think this isn't going to be a 90-minute Othello episode. Like, there's not that much going on, really, in some of these acts. So,
I think we have like three lines written for most of these.
Yeah, right. So we open with Act One, Scene One. The Duke gives his little opening monologue about love and music, as we talked about. He's there with his attendants, Curio and Valentine. And really, I suppose the purpose of this, it's a short, it's only 40 lines. The Duke loves Olivia. And then, you know, Valentine comes back in and says, you know, that, well, as far as we know, she's not interested in you. So there we go. that's the opening.
Yeah.
Or the opening scene, I should say.
But he is very persistent. He will send messenger, well, a messenger especially, throughout the entire play. We'll get to kind of the ending later on, but yeah. He's very, very into her, but she's not interested in him for, maybe she just doesn't love him, I don't know.
She never gives a reason, but she shouldn't have
father
to, right?
Died. Her father died, and then shortly after, her brother died, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So she says she's going to be in mourning for 7 years and she's not going to think about marrying whatsoever.
And I think that that's fair and that is absolutely not respected by the Duke for one second.
Oh, absolutely not. Because so, women are property.
Well, we move to Acts to that yes was coming from Shakespeare and especially from the Duke. That yes was not coming from me. That yes does not represent the views of the Playboys or Books Boys.
No, this is Shakespeare. This is 400 years ago. Normal.
Yeah.
So we move to scene. We move to scene two where we meet Viola for the first time, and she's there with an unnamed ship's captain who's listed on the Dramatis Personae. I forgot to mention him, but he's just listed as captain friend of Viola. Yeah. We don't see him really again after this. So he's irrelevant. So this is essentially where we meet her, and they talk about that the Duke in the town is Orsino, and she remembers him from when she was younger. So she's heading back to Illyria, and I mean that's basically it. She's on her way back in the ship. That's all that really happens in scene two.
Well, also she says, "I need to do something, so I'm going to work for this Orsino guy," and she's going to dress as a eunuch to basically earn some money.
Yeah. So. I thought that she dressed essentially, she does the old Shakespearean cross-dressing thing, and I didn't really know why. So it's just to earn money, I guess, to work for a singer.
Yeah, I think maybe because it could be a little bit dangerous for a woman to do it. It's easier for maybe a guy to work. I don't know.
I suppose that makes
working
sense.
Working at the time.
I kind of didn't understand. You know, this happens in a lot of these plays. People say, you know what, we're going to go solve something, but first let's cross-dress.
Yeah.
And this time she persists the whole play, just like, I'm just going to be a guy the entire play. Like,
but yeah, she could have just been like Maria, right?
Yeah, this isn't a reason for it. But anyway, We move to scene three. We're in Olivia's house, and we have the whole cast of, we're not allowed to swear on the show, people I don't like. So we have Sir Toby, we have Maria, then we have Sir Andrew. I don't think the clown comes in just yet, but...
No.
I don't... These scenes with these characters, to me, are a waste of my time. I mean, what have you written for scene three? Like, what have you got, Dan?
So, basically introducing who the people are, Toby's a drunk, and it's showing, like, how much he kind of annoys Olivia. He's just kind of a leech at this point. It's setting up the story, so they're bringing in Sir Andrew. He wants to court Olivia, but Sir Toby likes him just because he's rich, and he keeps getting money from him that he's saying probably that he's giving to Olivia, but he's just using it on booze himself.
Yeah, look, they're just two drunken revelers, right? They're just two old drunk guys that drink all the time. And Maria puts that to them plainly, like, that's just what, you're just two drunk guys that hang out, you know?
Yeah. And so Andrew thinks that Sir Toby's putting in good words for him, and maybe Olivia does like him, but he's too much of an idiot to really figure it out. Toby just persuades him to stay. He's like, oh, and I like honestly, your money.
Maybe Toby is putting in good words for him. I don't think it matters, because, like, if she's turning down the Duke, she's not going to go with this, like, old drunk guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, Andrew isn't as much of a drunk as Sir Toby.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, he will party with Sir Toby, but, yeah, he's just a stupid rich guy for the most part.
And I think it's fair to refer to Sir Toby as a leech, because, like,
yeah.
The problem with Olivia is her father's gone, her brother's gone, she's there, and she's, you know, her only relative, I suppose, kind of theoretically her male kind of guardian or protector, the only male relative that she seems to have, is just this drunken party guy, Sir Toby, that she's asking, like, you can leave, like, we don't need you here, like, you can go, please.
Yeah, but I think always, like, the Toby-Andrew stuff, it, for me, they have a lot of good humor between them, like, you always have Sir Andrew making mistakes of what he's understanding. Sir Toby's, like, joking around with him. I usually think, like, Toby has a bit of charisma that you do want to see his scenes, but maybe that's just because I did it, like, 12 times.
Yeah, you've got some affection for it, I suppose, that I don't have. And just from reading it, the comedy doesn't work for me. I don't know, but...
I wrote down a few things that I think are funny later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's have those as they come then. I do like when they say, she'll none of you. Like, I just love that. It's like, we don't even need to put the verb in. I will just have none of you generally. Like, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I think there's
then
only one,
scene four.
One more scene. Oh, there's two more scenes. So, yeah, scene four. Yep. Valentine's back. I actually forgot that he ever came back after the first scene, but we're back in the Duke's palace. Valentine and now Viola's already cross-dressing, and she comes in and she's going to work for the Duke. And she's called Cesario. That's her name when she's... for the rest of the play, really, she presents herself as Cesario until the very, very end.
Yeah.
And I suppose, really, this is where she meets the Duke, and we find out that the only thing the Duke cares about is still Olivia, and having previously sent Valentine, we figure out that what he's really going to be doing soon is sending Viola.
Yep. So sends Cesario to give message of love, and the reason he chooses Cesario is because he says, you know, Cesario's kind of womanish, or womanlike. So maybe she can get in. She's a good talker. She might be able to actually deliver the letter in person this time.
Yeah, because before, I think, Olivia wasn't even necessarily going out to meet them personally, right? She would just
wouldn't even let him in.
Yeah.
And, or maybe the first time, but she just closed it off. But the issue with this is we learn that Viola/Cesario loves the Duke.
Yes, so Cesario loves the Duke, and it's difficult for me to know what to say about this, because obviously... he's not interested in her at this point, because as far as he knows, she's a man. So I guess there's supposed to be some kind of comedy in that. He's interested in Olivia still, and he's not changing his mind on that at all.
That's this probably why. This picture.
Ah.
My book has pictures, by the way.
Ah.
I don't know if Dean wants to show this, but the pictures are nice.
Put it up again, and I'll take a screen grab to save me having to edit it from the video.
I can also...
There we go. Oh, yeah, just send me a picture. That would be much better quality.
Probably.
I'm not editing that out. So, Act 5 is where we wrap up Scene 1. Act 1. I got those thrown around. Yeah. So we start with Maria and the clown, and then Olivia. But the most important thing, I think, about this scene is that we meet Malvolio, and I think that he is an important character, and he's a character I kind of empathize with a bit at times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, they're tricking him a lot, you know?
They do.
So I do,
and
like
you have Olivia enter, and we don't know where the fool's been, Festy, this entire time. And so she says, "Take the fool away." Fool says, "Do you not hear, fellows? Take away the lady."
Yes.
And they just have a really great banter, I feel. So then they talk about like Olivia's brother, and the fool says, "All the more a fool to mourn a brother whose soul is in heaven." And
that bit was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is, they're really smart banter here. And Olivia actually kind of feels a little bit better. I mean,
yeah, that was so let me go back a step on that, because she's mourning and she says, "Why is he in hell that you're mourning him?" She says, "No, he's in heaven." So, "Well, why are you mourning him then? Like, that should be a good thing." He's like, "Hold on a second."
Good writing.
Yeah. So that I did like that.
For some reason doesn't like him and wants him to go.
Yes. We should say though, and I don't know if it comes up here or later, but Malvolio, the others in the gang don't really seem to take to Malvolio. I think it maybe comes up a little bit later, but
that comes up later in the drinking scene when he berates them for being loud and drunk.
Yes. Well, I think we're getting at that pretty soon, actually. But so at this point, yeah, we meet Malvolio for the first time. I like him. For me, he's a kind of main character. I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
he's certainly important. He's a key character. He gets the short end of the stick all the time.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And
I think
then,
the other thing I like about this play is that there's no like life or death, maybe similar to like Midsummer. Like there's no one who is going to die in this. There's not really a lot at stake. I mean, the Duke gets a little angry later on and says maybe, but yeah, even Toby, when he's playing these pranks and like picking fights with people, he says like, no blood will be drawn. It's just going to be for me to laugh.
Yeah, I suppose someone getting arrested later is like the most extreme thing that actually happens. And that seems to be cleared up relatively
quickly. He wasn't even arrested. He was just kind of like taken away at Olivia's behest.
Yeah, you know, so there are very low stakes. And he's not a vengeful Duke either. Like we see some Dukes that might be a bit worse. This guy seems quite happy-go-lucky, you know. So
yeah,
that helps. But we close the act really with Olivia and Viola then talking.
Yep.
And obviously she's come as a man to plead for the case of Orsino the Duke. Kind of seems like Olivia's more taken with Viola than the Duke or anyone else in the play.
Because Viola, she uses her brain basically to get in. She speaks incredibly intelligently, and I think that everyone's like, well, what do we say to that? So Olivia really likes that. Mostly I think she likes that Viola is a really good looking boy.
Yeah, the best looking men are women in disguise, apparently.
You can agree with that.
I can actually agree with that, yeah. And then right at the end, after she leaves, we get a little trick. This confused me for a moment because I wondered, did she really leave a ring behind? But no. So Olivia says to Malvolio, go and fetch him because he left his ring behind. And that seems to be an excuse to like get him to come back or to meet another time or whatever.
Yeah. And you can kind of we can kind of skip scene one of act two and come back to it. But yeah, act two, scene two, Malvolio then confronts Viola about the ring. Malvolio is pretty angry about it. Like, how could you do this? Like, she's in mourning. Like, don't ever come back. You're an idiot. Viola is then confused. Like, I didn't give a ring. Oh, crap. Does that mean Olivia loves me?
Yeah. So I do like how quickly she makes the jump there. Like, she's sending me a ring. She must be in love with me. That's the only possible solution. Like, there's no other confusion happening. That's it. She goes straight to it. I like the confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, and another thing similar to you. this person must love me.
Well, why not? So Yeah,
going back a bit.
We'll go back to scene one. Yeah, these would have been better in the reverse order actually, because scene two,
I agree,
continues from the last act. Scene one, pretty short. What is it? 30-odd lines. It's just Antonio and Sebastian on the ship. This is, as you know, we meet Sebastian, who is the brother of Viola, and we would later find out that in her disguise she looks identical to him, apparently, but they've not met in a while. And the friend, Antonio, is there, and they're on their way to Count Orsino's court, and that's what we find out really in that scene.
Yeah, I don't know if it's here or later, but Antonio is taking a really big risk. Like, he's really taken with Sebastian as well. Like, you save Sebastian's life, but then
he has enemies at court. He does say
not accepted because he went to war or had like some battles with Orsino. So
he does mention right at the end of the scene he has enemies at the court. So that's he shouldn't really be going. Well, but he's such good friends.
This might have been the arrest you were talking about.
What, sorry?
Was this the arrest you were talking about? Sorry, I'm speaking.
I think we get to that later, but just when Olivia kicks them out. But let's move to scene three. And I think this is where I almost gave up at this point. Like, this is just a long scene. It's Sir Toby, Sir Andrew, Festa, the clown, Maria, Malvolio, just all the hangers-on and servants of Olivia just spend 200 lines doing nonsense. Like, I don't know. Do you have anything positive to say about this scene?
Singing, it's kind of like a break, maybe. You can maybe see it as like an intermission from the main part. I like it because, again, there are some funny points. I wrote down, so the fool asks, would you like a love song or a song of good life? And then Toby says, a love song, a love song. So Andrew says, I care not for good life.
Yes.
It's like, these are the types of things that I really enjoy about the play. It's these small, like, funny moments. Then you do have Malvolio enter angry. And so this does get the plot going a little bit.
There's one joke here. When Malvolio enters, there's one joke I did like. He kind of says, have you guys got no respect for persons, places, nor time? And then the fool says, no, we were keeping good time with our songs. Like, we I like that.
So I think that there are some real funny moments. But this, once Malvolio enters, it finally does get things moving plot-wise. There isn't really any plot for the first half.
Yeah, I think that's why I prefer the second half, when the plot kicks in. In the first half, we just have some peopling, you know?
Yeah, so you have Malvolio threatening to kick them out, and they know that Olivia is going to be angry because they're partying and she's in mourning, plus it's really late. So he leaves after they just make fun of him, and they decide to play a prank.
Yeah, so this is where we realize that after he tells them off, to be fair, that they don't like him. So I assume as the steward, he was kind of going to be respected by them, but no, they do not like him.
No, but Malvolio thinks that everyone loves him. So
I empathize with Malvolio.
You have said.
Yeah, anything else that happens in this one? I think that's more or less the summary, isn't it?
Toby just says, Andrew, you need to get more money so I can use it, but I'll give it to Olivia, wink, wink.
Yeah, I'll help you out with that, yeah. Okay. So, we're getting soon to the part that you like, but scene four first, we go back to the Duke, and he's there, again, with Curio not doing a lot, but he wants to know who sang yesterday, and Curio says, well, that person's not here right now. Forget about Curio, he doesn't do much else. The person who sang yesterday, who they want, is the clown, Festa, right?
Yep.
So he's there, they bring him in, Viola's there again, and I guess she...
He does a jig or something, and...
Yeah, more of the same. He likes to do his little songs, and the Duke enjoys it.
I'll pay you for thy pains. No,
they
sir,
pay him a lot. Pleasure. Almost everyone tips him like a sovereign or a coin or whatever it is, you know. Like five or six times throughout the play, when someone's talking to him, they just kind of give him a coin. Like, there you go. Like, he's doing quite well for himself. As
he really
clown.
Is. He's a good singer. Yeah.
It seems
I like that
way.
He does play a bigger part. It's not just like a servant. I don't know. If you really do hate clowns, just read King Lear. He is a servant, but he dies, so...
Okay, well, that's...
I think it's the only clown to die.
Most of them do nothing, so although I don't like them, they don't offend me, you know? That's why.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So, this what one happens... definitely does. Yeah, this one does a fair amount. What happens next? The Duke enjoys the song, talks with Viola. She explains that her quest was not successful. Olivia is not going to back down, and the Duke's not really accepting of that. And that's more or less Act 2, Scene 4.
Yeah, Viola says who she loves, and Orsino's like, you can't love that person. Why would you want someone older than you, or why would you want someone who looks like me? That's
right. Know. A little bit of foreshadowing or something, maybe. Yeah.
And then I don't know what happened here. So Orsino gives Viola a jewel to give to Olivia. We never hear of this jewel again.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing of that jewel again, to be fair. I don't know. Maybe Viola's pocketed the jewel. I'm not sure.
No idea.
So now we close Act 2 with Scene 5. It's this is the one you sent me in video. Do you want to talk about this? This is your favorite scene, right?
This is my favorite scene from the play. Yeah, because I think it's the funniest scene. I think there's the most like you can do with gags. And yeah, so they... basically put a letter out. Maria's handwriting looks like Olivia's, and Malvolio thinks that the letter is from Olivia, and it's kind of a love letter, but it's also a bit of a riddle.
It's not just that the handwriting looks alike as well, though. It's intentional, isn't it? Like, they want it to look alike. They want to trick Malvolio.
Yeah. Yeah, like her C's, her U's, her T's, and they look like her very P's. There are some innuendos in there for sure.
Yes.
And yeah, then you also have like Toby and Andrew and Maria just, or Fabian, just talking in the background, making fun of them.
That's right. I'd already forgotten Fabian existed. He's another hanger on.
Again, yeah. Fabian's useless. I will 100% agree there. If your cast is Fabian, ask for a bigger part.
Yeah. But to be fair, although I didn't love this scene, I think this scene is sort of where things turned around a little bit for me. Once the plot was actually advancing, things were happening with Malvolio, I started to... things were going in an upward trajectory. And I did like it more after reading it, when I watched it kind of out of context, as of what's going on. But now that I've read it and then seen it, I do kind of like it, you know?
I am glad to hear that. Yeah. And so the main part of this is... so Malvolio now thinks that Olivia loves him because the letters M-O-A and I are in the letter, and they're also in his name, and he just fills the gap somehow.
He can't fathom that they're out of order, but he's like, I'll get over it somehow.
Yeah. There's a few more innuendos about responsibility being thrust.
Yes.
Yeah, Shakespeare loves those. And so Malvolio then is told in the letter, like, you need to be wearing yellow stockings, cross-gartered, and smile a lot.
This is the bit I remember from Upstart Crew, that they make him wear the yellow stockings, cross-gartered. Yeah, it's the one thing I remembered from this play.
Okay. And the reason they did that is because Olivia hates yellow. She hates the cross-gartered style, and she is in mourning. So if you smile a lot... she will think you're crazy.
And he comes in with a
giant smile later on.
Yeah, and it goes as you might expect. She's not loving that, so.
Oh, yes. And is that...
that's it? That's Act 3, Scene 2.
But Act 3, Scene 1...
Yeah, so we skipped ahead a little bit. So we finished Act 2 with the scene with the letters, the M-O-A-I. We move now to Act 3, Scene 1. More clowning. It's Viola talking to the clown, and he says that he lives by the church, therefore he's a churchman and all this kind of stuff. This is nothing for me. I don't know.
To me, it's one of those just fun banters. I enjoy things like that, but that's... yeah, it doesn't go anywhere, so I do understand your gripe.
Yeah, I think that's... what I don't like is the first 100 lines of this scene could just be deleted. Like, it's killing time, yeah. You know?
I think it's just Shakespeare making some jokes.
Fair enough, I suppose. So Toby and Andrew come in as well, and they're doing their usual antics, but they're talking to Olivia and Viola. Again, Viola introduces herself as Cesario, and she's your servant because I'm the Duke's your servant, and your servant's servant's your servant, and all this kind of stuff. So which is fine. Like, that is how the rules of logic would work, you know?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong about it. Not necessarily necessary.
No. Olivia now says to Viola, don't come back to talk about the Duke. Like, do not come back here to press his suit again, but you can come back yourself if you would like to tell me that he's no longer interested, and then I guess we just have a wee chat over some tea, you know?
Yeah. And Viola's like, maybe I just shouldn't go back at all. I don't think she ever says anything like that, but...
Yeah, I'm surprised, because, well, I suppose, yeah, Viola's really a girl, and in a world where there's not going to be any gay characters, she's not actually interested. So she just continues pressing the Duke's suit, you know? She's like, but what about the poor Duke? He loves you.
Yeah. And Viola is staunchly against it, like, saying, if only you knew that I'm a woman, then you would stop. But is this the last time that Viola really visits?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah.
She does appear later in Act 3, Scene 4, I think.
Yes, but I... Okay, yeah.
She's with the others, but I don't think she's with Olivia. She's with the... Oh, no, she is. She is, briefly.
She is. Yeah, she gets a locket from Olivia.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but then, Act 3, Scene 2, Malvolio enters. He's acting crazy. And Olivia is having none of it. So she basically just says, take him away. Toby, do something about him.
That's Act 3, Scene 4, I think.
Is that? Okay.
Yeah, but nothing happened. Like, we haven't really skipped anything. Act 3, Scene 2, it's just Toby and Andrew and Fabian talking again. Nothing really happens. And they just mention. Maria then comes in and says, yeah, we've done the cross garter and we've done whatever else. Then Act 3, Scene 3, again, very brief, it's Antonio and Sebastian on the ship again. And similar to the last...
No, they're in town.
Oh, sorry, yeah, so the guys from the ship have now arrived in time. That's what that scene is telling us. Then that's it, really. Nothing else kind of happens. Well, they separate, which is crucial. They separate, which is crucial, and he says, come and meet me later.
And the other really important point is that Antonio gives Sebastian his purse, like, because he might need it to find a room or something at the end. But so Antonio's a bit paranoid because he was fighting Orsino, so he's got to kind of hide.
Yeah. Now we move on to Scene 4, and that's the scene where Malvolio does all the things, and he's acting crazy, and he's doing his smiling and everything like that, and Olivia's getting... Now, Olivia doesn't get annoyed. She doesn't, like, send him away or anything, but she kind of... I think she's a little bit worried about his health. She's just kind of like, someone look after this guy, maybe put him to bed. You know, she's not... I think she's more confused than angry, maybe.
Yeah. They do say, I forget who it was, but they say he's acting possessed and, like, maybe he needs some help from the church or something.
Yeah.
But he's just like, I'm not really comfortable with all this smiling.
Yeah, and I suppose that's, you know, she's... I wouldn't tell someone off for smiling, but she's double mourning, so, you know, fair enough.
Yeah, but also, he's making it obvious to her, too. Like, at least in the versions I've seen, he comes in with a giant smile.
Right.
Like,
he also thinks that she's written him some kind of love note and fancies him, so he's acting up to that, and she's really confused. Like, what's this guy doing? You know?
Yeah.
And the others then don't help. Like, the guys who've put him up to this don't help him here at all. They're kind of like, what's he doing? He's mad.
Yeah. And so Toby kind of takes him away. But then in the same scene, Toby then has Andrew write a letter.
I didn't quite understand this. And the guys take some umbrage with Viola, Andrew and Toby do. And I'm not really sure why.
So they see Viola getting special treatment from Olivia. So they also see, like, Olivia basically in love with Viola. Andrew's there.
He's jealous.
He's jealous, kind of. Yeah. And Toby just kind of wants to watch the world burn, I guess. so Yeah, Andrew wrote a dual letter, but it's pretty crappy. So Toby just decides to be a middleman and kind of go back and forth between Viola and Andrew, saying, so yeah, this guy Andrew, he wants to duel you. He is crazy good with the sword. Goes back to Andrew and says, yeah, Viola really wants to duel you, also really good with the sword. And neither of them actually want to do the duel.
Yeah.
So it's Toby just creating chaos, which I really...
Why not? Like. Why not?
It leads to a bit of a comedic scene where they do touch tips of their swords. And yeah, both of them are kind of freaked out. So
yeah,
at least in the version I did. So I had my sword out, barely touched Olivia's sword, and she just dropped the sword and ran away.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Then you have Antonio come in and beat the crap out of me.
That's an interesting way to do it.
No, that's later on. Sorry, I'm thinking of Sebastian.
Okay, because what happens here, yeah, they do draw swords, but then Antonio comes in, and then, you know, Toby draws as well, and now we've got four people with the sword drawn. I suppose at this point, Antonio, we should stress, he sees Viola dressed as a man and assumes that it's his friend Sebastian, because they look alike.
Yeah, what did this guy Sebastian do? And then Antonio is immediately arrested.
Yeah, this is the arresting bit. Two officers come in and arrest him. And even as they're taking him away, and I just imagine them dragging him away and him like kind of reach back to be like, oh, but I have some more things to say.
Yeah.
Because he's like, well, why is my friend betraying me here? Like, why isn't Viola helping? And he says, give me back the money. And she actually says, I'll lend you some money. Like, that's fine. Like, yeah. But what about all the money that I gave you?
Yeah, and the reason he asked for the money is for his bail or his bond.
Yeah, now, this is where I started to like it, because this is comedy of errors territory, which is my favorite. So
you're one of the few people who would say that, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But I love that. So this, for me, that's why I started to really love the end of this scene, and then I think it sustained me. Then the last two acts are pretty short, and it sustained me through them. You know.
And I feel like this play does well in that you're like, why aren't you saying this? Why aren't you saying that? Like, it's so obvious that this error can be so quickly mended.
Yeah.
But you do have Antonio say Sebastian in this scene. So Viola's like, wait, does that mean my brother's alive? And then she leaves and looks for him. Like, thank you.
Yeah, because this is something I say all the time, like when we get these confusions, even in the tragedies, like if they would just have a conversation, you know, they would say something, this would be solved. So yeah, they do, I guess, here actually.
Yeah, it makes me so happy. So then we get into Act 4.
Act 4, yeah. Scene 1 opens with Sebastian and the clown talking. In comes Sir Andrew. He sees Sebastian and thinks it's Viola that they've just... you know, had their duels with and everything like that. So he starts hitting him and Sebastian beats up Sir Andrew. So this is the bit where you got me.
Yeah. So Andrew, of course, he's thinking like, oh, this is going to be so easy. It was so easy last time. Beats him over the head. And then Sebastian's like, who the hell is this guy? Beats the crap out of him and thinks that everyone around him is insane.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, with just cause.
Olivia come.
Huh? With just cause. He's like, what's going on around me? Like,
yeah. Then Olivia shows up and she's like, hey, why don't you come with me? And he's like, yeah, there's this beautiful woman. I have no idea who she is, but let's not let this dream stop. Or some quote along those lines.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's living the dream.
He's doing all right. Yeah, he's just going along with it at that point. And we move to scene 2, which is...
Hate this scene, I bet.
So straight away I see enter Maria and Klein, and I remember that I don't love this this scene.
Honestly, this scene is probably my least favorite.
Yeah, I mean, and now the Klein is Sir Topaz for some reason, and there's just more nonsense, and he doesn't achieve anything.
As like a monk or some priest. Yeah, he's dressed as a priest. And makes Malvolio think that he's even crazier than he already is, saying, oh no, it's actually really light out when he can't see a single thing.
At least this advances the plot for Malvolio, so I'll try to be positive about it. But yeah, it's not my favorite scene by any means.
But then Maria and Toby, they talk and they're like, yeah, "We're getting kind of tired of this. We've had our laugh. Fest, why don't you just go in there as yourself and tell them, like, yeah, we'll help get you sorted, like get you some paper and some ink."
Yeah, so I kind of like that they're not planning on taking it too far, really. You know, they're like, we did our prank. Well, that was fun. Let's move on, you know.
Yeah, and it's like, Olivia's going to get really angry with us if she figures this out as well, so maybe we should finish it up.
Yeah. And then Act 4 is almost over already. Like I said, the last two acts are very short. Scene 3 is only about 30 lines, and that's the end of the act.
Sebastian's wandering around, like, wow, this woman really loves me. She's beautiful. I'll love her back, I guess. And a priest comes and marries them.
When it's given to you on a plate, you know, you don't say no. And that's scene 3.
Yeah.
So this missed me the first time, because it is such a brief scene, I just kind of skimmed over it, and I didn't realize they were married, and then she mentions later, husband, and I'm like, hold on, I need to go back, what's happened here?
And it was that scene, yeah.
Yeah, they got married in like two lines, that's it.
Yep. I do feel a little bit bad, because like I feel these relationships didn't have much time to grow.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say I would trim Acts 1 and 2 and put more into Acts 4 and 5, but it's quite a short play. You could add to Acts 4 and 5 without trimming anything, really.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's also, like, super easy to digest, and that's why people really love it.
Maybe, yeah. Act 5 is only one scene, I think, isn't it? It's a 400-line scene, and then we're done. Yeah, there's one scene remaining of the play.
So, spoiler alert for those who just want to...
PJ, if PJ's listening, turn off the play.
Yeah.
So we enter with your favorite character, Fabian, speaks first from the land of irrelevancy. He's there with the clown, and then the Duke and Viola come in. The scene kind of starts slow. I mean, honestly, as an overall comment on the scene, I don't think it does a great job of wrapping things up. Like, I think more was needed, maybe, but
I think that's... Watching it, there's more time in between each line. You can probably add a little bit more stage direction to it. But yeah, it is done. How many lines are even in this? It's
400.
Okay, 400 lines. That's like half of Comedy of Errors, so.
Yeah, but, you know, 400 lines, the first 100 almost not much happens. I mean, certainly the first 50 is a complete waste of time. The Duke's talking to the clown, he gives him some money, and the clown gives him a word pun and makes him give him more money. And then he says, well, can I have even more? And he's like, if you bring me the woman I like, we'll see.
You see, I didn't even write that down. Like, yeah.
So yeah, like it's irrelevant. But now we finally get Antonio comes in with the officers again, and Viola says, here comes the man that rescued me, and we have a big chat about that, and he did me a kindness and things like that. The first officer kind of says, Orsino, this is that Antonio that took the Phoenix and fought from Candy, so he introduces him and the things that he did. That's grand. Antonio talks to Duke, refers to him as noble sir, and says, I shake off these names you give me, so he's not kind of coming in high-handed or anything, because remember, he's already not liked, you know, he comes in quite humble to the Duke, and the Duke starts asking, well, when did he get here, and this kind of thing. Doesn't really go anywhere though, does it?
Not really. It's just like showing that there's confusion
at this point. It doesn't get wrapped up. We don't find out, do they accept Antonio, what happens?
Well, it's kind of cut off, because you have Olivia entering. And Olivia's like, oh, there's my husband. Then Orsino says, husband? So he gets really angry with Viola, saying, what are you doing? Where's Cesario? What are you doing going behind my back?
Yeah, I've sent you to woo her for me, and you just wooed her for yourself. But Viola's like, what is going on? I'm not even really
I'm not
a man.
Married. What are you talking about?
So that's funny, and I like that. I think I like when we get the comedy here. And again, you're thinking she should kind of unmask now, but she's still slow. They're always slow to and cross-dress in these plays.
But it also, it doesn't feel like it drags on like it did with Measure for Measure, at least.
Yeah, that's fair. Measure for Measure, it really felt like it was getting crazy. But interestingly,
the only thing they really didn't need was like the priest coming in and saying, yes, I did marry these two.
Yeah. But, you know, to be fair, this is the first time that the Duke and Olivia actually appear together. And I suppose that's a payoff in itself, right? That's something.
Yeah, yeah. So the Duke says, basically, all right, Viola, Olivia, you're banished. I can't have you. I mean, I can't have you being here. I'm not going to kill you, but I am going to banish you. Yeah. And for some reason, Andrew just kind of enters, says, I got in a fight. I'm hurt. And then leaves.
Yeah. So I was looking at that. It's like, enter Andrew, but then nothing. What?
Yeah, basically. So ignore that I just said that. So then you have Sebastian finally enter, and he says to Olivia, yeah, I'm really sorry for this fight that happened, and sees Antonio right there. Like, oh, Antonio, you're fine. I'm so happy to see you. Like, what happened?
Yeah, and Antonio is kind of like, what's going on? And then there's two of you, because Viola's, so, you know, stroke Cesario is still here. And this is where I think I wanted like a bigger reveal or a big, oh my God, the siblings were both alive. This is amazing. I didn't see a big dramatic moment here.
I see it starting small and getting bigger, because it starts small like, wait, you look like me. Who's your father?
Yeah, they ask a few weird questions to figure it out.
Yeah, I have a brother named Sebastian. It's like, you're my sister. Then they hug.
Yeah, I thought it would be a bit bigger, but yeah, look, it's fine as it is, you know.
Yeah, and so Viola then finally says, "I am a woman."
There's the reveal.
There you go. You finally get a reveal, and for some reason, Orsino's like, "Oh, well, everything's fine now." Or she married Sebastian, so. This is the one.
Yeah, because
flaw, I feel it. He was so in love with her, and I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. So who all gets married here? Like, I kind of got a bit confused at the end, to be honest.
So in the end, you do have Sebastian marrying Olivia. Off stage, you have Toby and Maria get married. Don't know why. Irrelevant.
Irrelevant. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the very, very end, you do have Orsino marrying Viola.
Yeah, so now that he realizes his kind of servant that he really was keen on is a woman, it's like, aha, I'm allowed to have these feelings now. So,
but he does say, I do have to see you in your female garments first, then we'll get married. For some reason.
Because that's super important. Well, I mean, I guess, whatever. There's a little bit with the clown and Fabian come in, and I kind of forgot about him at this point, but they read a letter by Malvolio.
The only thing left that matters is that.
Yeah.
Because like, oh yeah, Malvolio's a thing, because everyone forgot what happened to Malvolio.
Yeah, I mean, I forgot, like, the characters forgot, you know, and this bit is not well paid off, to be honest. So Olivia's like, did he write this letter? What's happening? And then Malvolio comes in, he says, look at this letter, and then it just rushes to the end, like, very quickly. Without any confusion, without any,
yeah.
I didn't write this. She's like, oh yeah, well, she wrote that, and her handwriting looks like me, and she mentioned something, so it's all wrapped up in 10 lines. Like,
well, then Malvolio's like, I will not forgive you, and stomps off stage.
And then we don't see him again. It's
no, and yeah. Olivia's just like, Toby, or someone, can you just go out and talk to him? Just, I forget who she sends, but.
Yeah, and then the client sings, and then that's it.
Yeah. Basically.
I didn't like the ending. I kind of wanted more confusion between Olivia and Malvolio rather than her just immediately being like, yes, I've suddenly figured it all out in 30 seconds. And then I wanted to see what happens later. Like, do they bring him round? He just storms off. You show me more nice pictures.
Yes.
And they were happily ever after.
It's nice. And I do actually like the song at the end because it's about being young and growing old, and it ends with but that's all one, our play is done, and we'll strive to please you every day. So it's a nice ending. You are addressing the audience a bit as well. Like,
okay,
I don't think he ever really breaks the fourth wall, but I also just like the sound of the song, at least the one we did at our play. So it goes like, When that I was and a little tiny boy with a hay. Oh, the wind and the rain, a foolish thing was but a toy for the rain. Yeah, something like
okay.
that. So I think it has a nice song. There's a little bit of innuendos in here. He's talking about a foolish thing was but a toy. He's talking about his penis.
Right. I tend to just skim through the songs, to be honest. Yeah. I wasn't enjoying the
this
climb
the
already.
I think is actually good.
Because think about this in real life. If there's someone you're not enjoying in your company and then they start singing, I'm always like, nah, I'm skipping over this.
Yeah. I mean, I hope you're going to have like some positive things that you get out of it, something to look back on and say, you know, it's not bad. It's good. But
I was just looking through it there. There's one piece of the clown that I do like, Act 4, Scene 2. I don't know why, but it's the bit where he says, I'm gone, sir, and anon, sir, I'll be with you again, and it tries like to the old vice, your need to sustain the dagger of Laith in his rage and his wrath, cries a hand to the devil like a mad lad, hair thy nails, dad. I don't know, I like that bit, but then the rest I just skimmed over.
That's fair. But yeah, I was looking through like different people's rankings before this, and a lot of the time that it's either middle of the pack for some people or very, very much loved.
Really?
It is considered by many to be his best comedy.
No.
It really is.
And I would put this middle or slightly below.
I place this number two, but most people place this is number one for the comedies, but still below like five or six of the tragedies.
Okay. So people are saying that, okay, not his best play, but his best comedy potentially. Now,
yeah, not his best play.
Yeah. We know that I put the Comedy of Errors at number one, but I'm thinking even if we take that out, I think I liked so many plays that I liked better than this. You know, I liked As You Like It. Even Measure for Measure was better than this. Like I liked Midsummer Night's Dream. This is not All's Well That Ends Well. Everything. Like, this is so low for me.
Ooh, I hate All's Well That Ends Well.
I know
well.
You do.
Oh, man. We're going to switch sides on that one, aren't we?
Are we doing that one?
Reading that one
no, we're not doing that then. Okay.
Please, no.
Well, we kind of talked about this. So I guess we can mention now that we've kind of finished where we're at. We might do one more Shakespeare and then maybe put him aside for a while. But I've forgotten which one we were going to do. Do you remember?
There's so many that I would be fine with. I mentioned Much Ado About Nothing because that's my personal favorite.
That is it, yeah. Much Ado About Nothing, which is also better than this play, by the way.
I mean, I have to agree, but I don't like the way you say it.
Okay, well, we'll do that one next time then, I guess. That'll be 15. I think 15 is enough to be getting on with, and we can put Shakespeare aside for a while.
Do all like 40?
Maybe one day. I don't know. This might be fun to get on to do something else for a while. I definitely don't want to do anything that has the word Henry in it. So that's
the other thing. So I see like 12th Night at near like the bottom of the list for one ranking, but they had like Henry V Part 1-2 like at their top.
Wow. I mean, so I think you can remove 7 or 8 plays immediately if you cut out the Henrys, and then The Merry Wives of Windsor, which is like a comical spin-off from one of the Henrys. Mm-hmm. So without context, there's no point doing that. So you lose like 9 plays straight away.
Yeah. If you don't like farces, you're going to hate Merry Wives of Windsor.
I actually do like it, by the way.
One of the few.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend reviewing it just because I think you need the context of the original play, you know? You take out a couple of Richards as well and a John. You lose a dozen plays almost by just cutting out the histories, to be fair.
Yeah, people will not be happy with you if you cut out Richard II or III, because those are probably the most liked.
Well, Richard III is liked. I wasn't aware that Richard II was much liked, is it?
People will say it's an underrated one.
Okay.
So
just not the Henrys, then.
I saw one ranking that had Richard II above Richard III, and I think they're crazy.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So yeah, I guess next time we're talking about Shakespeare, it's going to be Much Ado About Nothing, I guess.
Yay.
Yay. Well,
the one I've been through 3 times.
That's us. Have a Shakespearean day.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.